Hey, Ricky, here I am back on St. Patrick's Day in the morning. I have just been to the Nine Health Fair, where one of the big Denver TV stations goes around the state and gives medical tests for older people or younger people or diabetes, PSA. I'm getting some blood work done. They do it for $30, which is probably about 10% of what it would cost you to go to a hospital and have all those tests done. So every 4 or 5 years I go, and 6 years ago was when they caught me, my prostate cancer, when they did a PSA on me. And I've had that all treated and taken care of. So I'm back home, and we stood in line for about 2 hours at this Nine Health Fair. I made the remark, if I was rugged enough to stand in line for 2 hours, I might not even need to go to the Nine Health Fair. But anyway, we got it done. In a couple of weeks, they'll send me a couple of pages of blood chemistry work they did, and I'll show it to Jan, and she being the nurse, she'll tell me whether I'm living or whether I'm dying. Okay, I'm going to start on the second page of your questionnaire thing here and talk about Dad's brothers and sisters. I'll probably start with the oldest one, which was Aunt Lilla. Aunt Lilla lived most of her adult life down in if I remember, when she was married and before her husband died, she lived in Vienna, Virginia. And I don't know where that was, but I'm sure it was pretty close to Washington, D.C., as her husband, whose name was Walter Abbott, worked as an anabologist or something like that, pathologist for the Department of Agriculture. And my last memory of him, when he came to town up in New Hampshire, he was in a wheelchair. He was pretty badly crippled, and from what I don't know, but he didn't last too much longer than that. They had two children, a boy, the older boy Robin, and a younger girl Betty. They've all passed away already. They had lived in suburban Maryland, just outside Washington, D.C. But Aunt Lilla was one of the best cooks you'd ever want to know. Being brought up on the farm, she cooked with eggs and butter and heavy cream and everything. And boy, if she made something, it was good. I can remember they would come up and we'd have a reunion, and she would make Maryland fried chicken and some kind of caramels, homemade caramels, and boy, were they ever good. She was really a farm cook, and they used good, rich stuff. Aunt Lilla lived to a ripe old age. I guess she was in her upper 80s. When she passed away, and Robin and Betty, the boy and the girl, are both gone now. Betty only a few years ago. I guess my favorite uncle was William Oren, or Uncle Bill. He was the guy I mentioned before that had quite promisable Negroid features, either Native Indian or something like that. Pretty good sized lips and spread nose, and a couple three of his children had, especially the boy, George, was, had very pronounced, dark complexion and Negroid features or Native American features. They lived, just outside the District of Columbia in, Falls Church, Virginia. And at one time he had about 100 grapevines, 100 different varieties of grape all around his lot there. And as I understand it, and if the house is still there, they're completely surrounded by, oh, quite large homes. So he must have made a little money selling some land off around his property there. As I told you before, he was quite a brilliant guy. He came out of the University of New Hampshire with a master's degree in chemical engineering when he was 21 years old, and he worked 49 years for the federal government, making him 70 years old, and they told him that he couldn't work any longer. He would have stayed there till he fell. But he did a lot of work on some disease in cattle that might have been brought on by something in the forage that they ate. And I can remember he had quite a number of important publications on this subject. But while I was going to school in Utah, he came to Utah for some meetings on what they call some X disease in cattle, and he was going to give a paper, only since he was retired, they declined to pay for his expenses to go to the meeting, but he came anyway and paid his own expenses and to give his paper at the meeting about some sort of diseases in cattle that they thought originated in the food that they ate and the forage that they ate. So he was quite a smart character, that guy was. He loved to fish, and he'd come up to New Hampshire and we'd go fishing. He had a canoe, that an old town canoe that he'd bought way back in the 20s, or maybe even before that. I would suspect in the teens or 20s, and he kept it in the garage at Uncle Guy's house up above the farm, and we'd get that, and it was on a trailer, and we'd get that thing and hook it onto a car and go somewhere and go fishing. And I think to this day that Frank has got this canoe. Of course, it needs some work, but it's a wood rib canoe with canvas over the top, and you have to take care of these things, or the canvas will just rot if you don't treat it. But Frank, I think, has still got the canoe up there. Up on Terrace Street in Marlboro. As I told you before, when his fourth child was born, his wife committed suicide, as I understand it. The oldest girl's name was Polly, and she worked for the Library of Congress, and after that she was married to some nobleman from Europe, and she was my sister Margaret's age. George was my age. And Joyce was your mother's age. And Billy was Frank's age. So they pretty much followed along, I guess, whenever Uncle Bill had a baby, why Charles Harrison and Ruth did. So, that's about it for William Orrin Robinson. The next one, I think the next oldest, was Guy. And Guy bought the property from my parents, when they burned out up past the farm, they bought the lot from my dad and built a very nice house up there. Guy was married to Marion Green, and she lived to be quite old. I think just died, just a few years back here. She lived in Keene, New Hampshire. They had two children. Carl, who was about your mother's age, and a girl, Sally Ann, who was a year or so younger. But as I say, they had a house above the farm, and he was next to Uncle Bill. He was the next fisherman in the family, and he took us all and taught us how to fish, too. And he was a good fisherman. He also worked for the State Highway Department along with my dad, Charles H. And he died from an accident, I believe with a chainsaw. He apparently had some sort of a medical attack, a heart attack or stroke or something while he was running the chainsaw, and apparently for some reason or other it caught fire, and I'm not sure, but I think it burned him quite badly, but he was dead from the heart attack apparently. But his wife Marion, a very nice lady, lived many years after that. Carl, the boy, still lives in Marlboro, up on George Hill's hill. And Sally Ann, I don't know where she lived, but the last I knew, her husband was quite badly crippled in an automobile accident. And perhaps you remember him at the reunion. He was in a wheelchair. Awful nice guy, but he was bound to a wheelchair. Okay, so I guess the next one would be Edgar. And incidentally, that Bertram is, I think, spelled B-E-R-T-R-U-M, Bertram, rather than U. I think the first U is supposed to be an E. Uncle Edgar stayed on the farm. And took care of the grandparents, George and Anna Elizabeth, and worked on the farm. And the way Grandpa Robinson ran the farm wasn't too good. He wasn't much of a business head. He sold milk by the bottle and cream and the maple syrup and stuff like that. But his choice of cows wasn't very good. And this was the starting of the era when a lot of the milk industry went to single variety cows, special variety cows. And Edgar decided when he took over the farm that he would go to Canada and get some purebred cows up there. I think they were Ayrshires, and they were available in Canada. And apparently when he was up there, he met a girl by the name of Greta Sobey, whom he married. She was a registered nurse, and to my notion, not very easy to get to know. She was a nice person, very good cook and all that, but she, to my notion, was a little bit standoffish. And they always had a dog. She always had a red chow dog. And, don't mess with the dog, and don't do this, and don't do that. And I was always scared of the dog, but I always wanted to pet him, but he was always pretty much barking at us, and grousing around that he didn't want us in the house and around like that. So after Grandma and Grandpa Robinson died, we didn't do a whole lot of socializing up on the farm. And I remember from my dad telling me about the farm, apparently when Grandpa Robinson died, my dad, Charles H., was told to settle the estate, Uncle Edgar came and said, "Well, now look, Charlie, I've worked here for years and years on the farm and took care of Mother and Dad, and if you want to see my bill for all the work I did on the farm," he says, "I have it all down in this ledger book." And when my dad took a look at it, he says, "My God, Edgar, that's more than the farm is worth." So apparently the other people, the other surviving brothers and sisters, signed a paper and just signed the farm over to Uncle Edgar, and that was it. Nobody else got a nickel out of it. And the sad part of it was that Uncle Edgar and Aunt Greta would leave the farm in January and February and come down to Florida and stay with my dad down there. And after Uncle Edgar died, and Aunt Greta still wanted to go down there, and my dad made a deal with her saying, "Well, look, Aunt Greta, you're a little bit younger than I am, and if you'll you'll stay here in Florida with me, I'll give you this house when I die." So he put her name on the title of the house, and of course my dad got sick in 1973. Up until that time, Aunt Greta had always motored north to Canada to see her relatives, and Dad would ride along with her and stop at Anna's and Frank's and visit for a couple of months during the summer, and then they'd go back to Florida in the fall. But the particular year when Dad got sick in April or May, and I went down there, was in 1973, Greta says, "You know, I've got plans to go with your cousin Betty up north this summer." And I said, "Well, I guess if you're going, you're going to go." And when I talked to Dad about it, he says, "Well, I don't understand. Where is Aunt Greta? I haven't seen her for quite a number of days." And I said, "Dad, she took off and went to Canada." And my dad said, "Uh-oh, I think I made a mistake." And of course that went through, and she got the house, and not only had the proceeds from the farm that they sold, but my dad's house in Florida. So she came out doing pretty good financially. And when she died, I asked Frank what happened to the money from the farm and the Florida house and all that. "Oh," she said, "she gave that to her old maid sister up in Canada," and that was the last we ever heard of any of that. So I suppose when that old maid sister of her died, the Canadian government got that all that money from proceeds from the farm and the house down in Florida. So we weren't too happy with that deal. I guess they'd rather give it to the government than give it back to the people that it belonged to. It wasn't a very good situation, but anyway, that's the way she handled it. I did spend a good deal of time with Uncle Bill any time he came up for the summer, and usually he brought two or three of the children with him, and we go fishing and stuff like that. But there was a time they came up about every summer, and I remember specifically they always had a big lug box of sweet cherries in the back seat of the car. Almost every year they'd come up, they'd find some cherries somewhere on the way and buy a whole lug box full of them. Boy, were they ever good eating, those nice sweet cherries. I didn't get to visit with Aunt Lilla and Robin and Jan, her children, only for about a year and a half when I myself worked for the Department of Agriculture down in Beltsville, Maryland, and I got to know them quite well then. But up until that time, we only met them during the family reunions up in New Hampshire and stuff like that. But I got to know them quite well, much better, when I was down there for a year and a half working for the Department of Agriculture. And they were good people. Like I say, Aunt Lilla was a wonderful cook, and Robin and Betty were good kids. Robin was married to a girl, Jan, but they had no children. Betty, I did not know her. She got married later on in life, and whenever these people passed away, none of them bothered to tell anybody up in New Hampshire that so-and-so was dead. I never knew when Aunt Lilla died, or Robin or Betty, until maybe 3 or 4 years afterwards. In the same way with Uncle Bill, W.O., William Oren. He was in a rest home, and I was talking to Frank one time. Oh, he said, "My God, he died 2 or 3 years ago." But they never bothered to tell people what was going on. But I remember Uncle Will, W.O., was interested in fishing so much that he came up to the farm one time and asked Uncle Edgar if he could go down in the meadow, the other side of the brook down there, and get a tractor in there and make a fish pond so he could put some trout in it, you know, and come up there and fish. And they found a spring up there on the side hill, and I think they dug out a pretty good fish pond down there, but the water wasn't quite cool enough. And my dad, Charles Harrison, had a lot up by the Eskimo, which was up near the Marlboro-Dublin line, and he gave that to my Uncle Bill, thinking that he would build another trout pond up there. I don't believe he ever did, and that particular piece of property had some very good blueberry bushes on it. We used to always go up there to pick our blueberries every year. But Uncle Bill also came up one time and bought a piece of land just north of the farm, Grandpa and Grandma Robinson's farm, from somebody from in the Hildreth family, and he bought 10 or 12 or 15 different varieties of high bush blueberries and planted them up there. And until just a few years back, those blueberry bushes were still there. They were cultivated blueberries, and much larger than the old wild blueberries. And Frank said something about taking care of it after Uncle Will died, but Carl, who was Guy and Marion's son, he took care of it, and the last time we were up there, they were all gone. They'd chopped them down or done something with them, so I don't have any idea what happened to those blueberries, but that's the kind of guy he was. Down in his home in Virginia, he had all those 100 varieties of grapes all around his acreage there, and then he'd go up in New Hampshire and plant these blueberry bushes and all kind. He was interesting. He was an interesting guy, and he liked to do stuff like that. Well, okay, that's the first paragraph of the second page of your question and answers. So I'm going to take a break here. I think I have done about 24 minutes.